Hello audio listener, please subscribe, leave a like and review on the platform you're listening from. The video version of this show is on YouTube and the link will be in the description.
Yeah, 100%. Cool? I was going to actually pour another little...
Get yourself ready.
This thing is like probably about an 80% ice, so it's been like super inefficient in terms of getting me liquid to my mouth.
What are you going to?
It's still a little bit of vodka and a little bit of grapefruit juice and some soda, if anybody would like.
This has got the image of like a salesman, man.
I'm ready to give anybody
what do you want to be in there?
What do you want to be in there?
Anything.
Yeah, what were you looking for?
It's for everybody if they want, but it's only if you don't want it. I'm not saying it's a good idea, but I'm also not saying it's a bad one.
What do you really want?
Tell me how you really feel about this.
Welcome back to another Music Matters podcast. And we are delighted to have Jesse Brew.
Thank you
for coming on, mate.
Jesse, thanks so much for coming on the show, bro.
Super appreciate you guys.
Now, I'm going to start off with our usual opening question. Where are you from?
I'm from Vancouver, Canada.
How'd you get into the electronic music scene? What was your musical background and influences? Like, how did your journey start?
I guess my journey started when I was probably around 11 or 12. I've got an older sister, about 4 years, that was like into dance music.
Cool.
I was always sort of like vaguely fascinated by dance music via like 90s films like Hackers, like Mortal Kombat.
The theme song
to Mortal Kombat really fucking hooked me.
Don't get Brad started.
You're a big Mortal
movies.
Kombat fan?
Well, he's like,
the new one? The new one was just
dog
fucking
shit. It was fucking dog shit. And I tell you what, I actually have friends that worked on the miniseries that was happening for a bit. I don't know if you, honestly, had potential to at least.
Mate, the old
one. Okay, you guys are geeks.
They're about to just get into 20 minutes on the
video.
The failures of the Mortal Kombat franchise being actualized in the film industry. Okay, music. Back to the music. It started from that place. Okay. I would say that in conjunction with my sister's interest in dance music and also the soundtrack to the movie Hackers, which was like
a lot of
UK stuff, like Prodigy was like a huge influence in Underworld.
Underworld really did something special
for me.
Underworld, like I bought their album.
The newest one.
I don't think Darren Emerson is still involved because when I bought the newest, it was a double 12 inch, and I don't think Darren Emerson is involved with them anymore. I'm not 100%, but their sound, I love that, man.
It's honestly I think it really, for me, it shaped the way that I viewed music from an early age.
Born Slippy.
Watching everything in its entirety when I was younger was like, to put that into scope, to see a group of people performing live and doing dance music, I mean, that also struck a chord with me, I guess. So it'd probably be my love for movies, but also my sister DJing, which sort of inspired me to buy turntables when I was younger.
So you did start on turntables?
Yeah, I started on turntables and collecting vinyl.
Do you still have your vinyl collection?
I do, but it's actually in storage at my parents' house.
That's okay, as long as you still got it, bro.
I've got my own personal collection of stuff that I put out over the last 10 years and shit that I've collected here and there, but honestly, it's just like technology has shifted so much and I feel so much more comfortable. It's funny, I never used to feel that way. The first time I stepped on CDJs, I was like, what the fuck is this?
Mm-hmm.
And now it's changed in such a way where it's just too much pressure, too much work.
I mean, we've talked about it many times. I only play my vinyl. Yeah. I don't play out like you guys. Yeah. Never done anything like this, but I got my 1210s at home, right, 1200s, Mark IIs, obviously, right?
Yeah.
And I still got all my vinyl and I love doing it, but we've talked about this many times and touched on it. You can be so much more creative with CDJs and the mixes nowadays.
Definitely, with looping functionality and just like hot cues, you're basically
producing music.
You are,
player.
For sure.
Yeah, you have Blake does it, doesn't he?
Honestly, 100%. I think it's like, it gives you a huge fucking leg up.
Absolutely.
Where you're like, I can see what's coming. Yeah. I know in my mind if I already have hot cues set up. And it's just, it's a performative thing.
Yeah, man.
But That being said, there is also the journey of playing records that, you know, there's an uncertainty of it that comes along. But like, you can read the grooves and know where things are coming, but it still doesn't stop you from panickingly looking where that empty space is, trying to find the breakdown and like...
Or maybe chatting to someone in the corner and then looking back and going, holy fuck, man. Okay, yeah, man.
Yeah, that's just the A1 and it's just about run out, for sure.
Yeah.
And the like... what that forces you into. I mean, they both have their pros and cons.
Absolutely,
sure.
I agree. And I totally agree.
From a standpoint of releasing shit, I do feel that it's hugely important to, like, still always put out physical medium, because I think it sounds better, it's more tangible,
it's a collectible as well.
And it embroiders your, or emboldens your sort of what you're doing long after you've been around. And
absolutely,
I think as musicians, like, most people don't get a fucking fair shake, and so at least the thing that you love doing makes its way into the world in a way that exists, that's tangible,
and it's
for
physically there.
Yeah.
It's physically there.
It's got artwork attached to it.
I still do it. You pull it out and you look at where the label is and the etchings that are around on it. You can see
the
sleeve, the sticker, pressed. Where was it pressed?
Yeah.
What date was it?
Yeah.
Which guy? There'll be initials on there. There's all those little things.
It's imprinted.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
You know, and you don't get that. I think, as I said, pros and cons, but you definitely...
There is pros and cons, 100%. And I totally agree with you on the sound side of things. Like, So I bought all my vinyl from England.
Yeah.
Didn't touch it. It was in boxes. Exactly the same as you.
Yeah.
Fucking boom, straight up in the attic.
Yeah.
There we go, man.
It's just a pain in the ass to move around, essentially.
It was big and fucking heavy, man. It's in boxes. I moved it from A to B. It's going back to C, right in the attic.
Yeah.
So, and then, when controllers first came out, I was kind of like, interesting, different.
Yeah,
I can still play and not have to get all this shit out of the attic and do my thing. So I got a cheap little Newmark thing very early on. Then I got a little Vestax one, and then I ended up with a Newmark NS7-2, which had the little spinning platters. Like, it actually had little mini vinyls.
Yeah,
it was one of the first ones that did it.
Yeah.
And that was great, and I loved it. And then I was like, oh man, I just want to touch vinyl again.
Yeah.
But I went DVS.
Okay,
So I went, I already had Serato, because my controller, was Serato, so I already had it on my MacBook, and I was like, okay, fucking sweet.
Yeah.
Two turntables, mixer, already got Serato.
Yeah.
Let's go. Got the DVS, started playing it. One day a friend of mine was over, and I was like, yeah man, I'll show you how to have a little jam. It's easy. 1, 2, 3, 4, man. 1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2, 3, 4. Here it comes, man. Right? And I had some of my vinyl out then. I'd already put it on the shelf. And he was like, oh, can we listen to some of that? And I put on the real vinyl. The fucking sound.
Oh, it's...
Right there, Jesse. Right there, man.
Yeah.
That minute he was there, I was like,
sounds
so nicer.
Yeah, man.
So much
fuller.
Richer.
Yeah.
The low end is really pronounced.
Fuck
it's,
yeah, mate.
It's honestly, you really, really don't notice it that much unless you have that like A and B moment.
Absolutely.
And also, I found it very noticeable on like a high end pair of studio or like monitors, like Void.
Good monitors.
You know,
man,
you play on a pair
of
Voids,
and
you're gonna fucking tell real quick what's that MP3 rib.
I guarantee you, any person, if we had the same track on MP3 or WAV, whatever highest format,
back to back,
and that same track on vinyl, and you played it over that same
system?
Really loud, everyone would hear the difference.
Yeah. Oh,
if they really were there.
Fully agree.
And you went, okay, everyone, stop the crowd.
Yeah.
Everyone stop dancing.
Yeah. How do you feel about this?
Like, listen to this and then listen to this. Do I play this one or play this?
It's,
you know what I mean?
I've had it where it's so noticeable, like I really changed my perspective on, like, I used to be really bad with being like, oh, here's like a UKG vinyl rip of something that I got off of YouTube or whatever, man, sounds dope and like it's gonna be cool when I play it, and then you play it next to something in a club setting that is like professionally mastered and ripped, and you're like, oh fuck, like it is the difference between a dance floor continuously dancing and then I'm all being like, what happened to the fucking speaker system, like the cages kicked in and it's all gonna be like all the low end's gone, it's like really piercing and pitchy, and it's just like it's like really,
you know what's funny as well, some of my older vinyl it was actually even recorded like that too. I put it on and it's like, you're just like, holy fuck, man, those boys back then, they just winged this one.
Yeah,
it's all there was like barely any mastering, like it almost sounds like that's, it was it in someone's toilet. You know
good. What I mean?
Like, that's also, that's really funny you bring that up, because man, like the industry standard for mastering tracks like 20 years ago, like digging through over the last few weeks and like going through like just some earlier American house label shit, whereas like,
yeah, man.
Where I'm like, is this the rip? And I'm like, nah, this
no,
is
this
like
is
a,
it.
This is a proper bounce. This is what it sounded
this
like.
This is yeah. One of my favorite tracks in the world, Alias Follow Me.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah. That track right yeah. there, that's Street on my Desert Island
yeah.
top 10.
Yeah.
And we talk about it loads. But you listen to that, I've got it.
Yeah.
Strictly Rhythm, man.
Yeah.
I got
all the Strictly Rhythm well, shit. All the shit.
It doesn't sound great.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't produced well. Yeah. Like it's produced as a track well. Sorry. Yeah. Take that
in
back.
Terms of an arrangement, yeah. it's there, but the final product.
But the like, product itself, yeah. but I'll play that track all day long, every day. And I love how it sounds, because it sounds like it was made in someone's fucking house.
Well, and that's the beauty.
Which is the root of it.
Well,
all.
And that's the
it's
beauty of
music.
That music. Yeah, that's man. Like, especially the earlier shit that really is like mostly, well, it's not mostly, but partially it's nostalgia.
Yeah, man.
You know,
yeah,
it's that like, shit where you're like, you think about it sometimes when you're formulating a playlist and you're kind of like, I'll have to stop myself because there's certain things that I will get overly excited about. And then you're kind of like, shit, not everybody may have the sentimental, emotional, nostalgic attachment.
Yeah.
And it may end up just being me being like, this is awesome. And everybody
fucking
be like,
yeah.
What the fuck is this shit,
dude?
Like, sorry, man.
I was going to say, it's like Hot Nature's when they done Hot Nature's done the remix of Zarian 3.
Yes.
Hungry for the Power. Right, that was like a basic song.
Yeah.
But I mean, when that came on in the dance floor.
Dude, absolutely crushed. There's certain, there's early, like, Kerry Chandler will always
Kerry
be one
Chandler,
of the best. And
Jesus,
honestly,
mate,
this shit still
I've
stands
so
up
many,
in the studio.
I've made 100%. So many of my
his early Madhouse shit does not get enough love.
No.
I mean, it's.
It does in my house.
Okay. you know, maybe that's just more of a testament to how much I slept on a lot of the earlier stuff of that label, you know? And like, shit like Stickman, and like, I don't know. There's a lot of labels that they're really ahead of their time for the quality
absolutely.
Of shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
they're actually
like,
putting
we're like,
out. Yeah, man.
It's surprising sometimes to find out some of the shit you're listening to on the headphones where you're like, this sounds great. And it was produced and came out in 92.
92.
This,
or,
this is
or 80
like,
something. Mate,
so,
and sorry, this
years.
Is what I was going to say.
On,
again,
like,
I didn't mean to cut you off, but I'll be at some of these things and I hear those little bits, just little bits in tracks where I'm like, oh, yeah, man.
Yeah.
I know where you got that from.
Yeah.
I'm
100%. I love that.
I'm fucking 100%, man. And then instantly, though, and that's the beauty of music, instantly in my mind, I'm back there listening to that one.
Yeah.
And I'm appreciating this, but I'm like, oh,
old
but
with the new, where it's this. And it also has engaged you in another way where you're kind of like, fuck, I got to figure out what edit of this is. Like, you do that dig of
what
who sampled
who.
And
again, samples. So originally, when sampling first came out, some people were snobs about that. Oh, man, sampling. But fuck that.
Well, I just think that it's such
that.
A. I just think, like, for me, my interest also with dance music also coincided with my love for, like, early 90s hip hop.
Yeah.
And, like, boom bap and all that sort of stuff. And I think that, like, there was this moment in time where there was all this technology that was like, you know, left aside and people weren't using all these drum machines and all of a sudden this generation came
just
through. I was like, fucking garbage is actually what's going to define the sound for the next 40 years of fucking music.
Absolutely.
And I think that sampling like was such a massive part of that because it's like you're re-engaging music that pre-existed and introducing a younger fan base to something 100%. That was already there. But it's also, you know, you're doing something completely new. Like,
yeah, man. 100%. I mean, what? Fuck me, the 808.
Yeah.
It's insane, man.
Right there. That little machine right there was bought out for a certain reason.
Yeah.
And never got used for that because the people that it was aimed at went, no, that sounds
live
shit,
live instrumentation.
What the fuck
is
that?
Man,
and then all of a sudden, you know, the housey dance boys.
It's so funny that
made
that's
one
what it was
and
made
went,
for.
Holy fuck, man. That this sounds is... fucking amazing. And boom.
Yeah.
Here we are. And again, we talk like this kind of geeking off just because I'm thinking 808, but we love Behringer.
Oh, yeah.
What they do, all their things they're doing right now, I wish they'd sponsor us. Actually, Behringer, give
Behringer,
us a shout.
Sponsor us,
Because we do say it lots, man.
Yeah.
Their replicas they've done, bang for buck.
They're great. I mean, there's also an ilk of people... I am myself personally, I'm a very poor human being.
Yeah,
I live
man.
Like below the poverty line.
Yeah.
So like my threshold for gear, although I do love it, and there's nothing better than analog synthesis. 100%. And you can tell the sequencing and the programming is so much different and so much richer than it is than what you can do in the box. 100%. Although we live in such a world where damn technology has changed so much that it really it's also just about it's all about who's using it and how you use it. And like the process in which it's going through, you know?
Yeah,
like,
man.
Who's mixing it, how you're, you know, how it's being mastered, like all that shit, I guess, affects what turns out down the day. But yeah, and to answer your question, I guess no, I'm not a year at. I have like a TR-909 or the TR-9. Just use
Beautiful. Yeah,
Ableton and lots of sample stuff and tons of plugins. And
mate, I've made two tracks with just the stock plugins on Reason.
Man, they're all the tools are there. Yeah. They're mean, it's just about how you use the shit.
For sure,
you know?
Like, it's like any.
I've seen people with like thousands of dollars in a studio and make like truly dog shit music.
Yeah, man. 100%. And you see a guy with like, you know, Fruity Loops.
And an old PC from 94. And you're like, this guy is changing the face of music.
Right.
Going back to like tracks that are timeless, I played an event in Vancouver and I played my closing track was Dre Belcher, Energy Flash.
Okay, yeah.
Right, and that was made in 92.
Yeah.
And the lady came up to me and was like, oh, what's this song? I was like, this song is older than me and you.
I love that shit.
Still pumping.
I love that shit. I can't remember the name of it. It's like, I want to say like Toytonic's Calypso. It's like an old classic.
Calypso rings a bell.
I don't remember, but it's like another one that's like 91.
Yeah.
And you play it and it sounds like it was like just made yesterday. And then fidelity wise, it holds up. Musically wise, it's still relevant to what's going on. And it's just like, you know, I find that our current music, it seems like so many people are striving to do, you know, what was so successful back then, you know?
Yeah. I'd love to. I'll be honest with you, come somewhere like this and do just a full set of 90s, early 90s, and just see how it went down.
Just strictly, we'll go down aces here. People would lose their shit. Honestly, I was going to just play disco shit today, and part of me wishes I would have, because I was like, people love going on a journey.
It's
something about it. It's happier.
Happier. We were talking about that too earlier, like, some of those earlier tracks, it was that happy vibe. That was what it was all about.
Yeah.
And obviously, techno has always been techno. It's a bit darker.
Yeah.
Always was.
Yeah.
And again, so we were talking earlier outside. You lived in Germany. I'm sure you came across quite a bit of techno in
100%,
Germany.
100%.
Those guys
love it. I love it too, though.
I do. Don't get me wrong.
You know what I like about it there is that it's specifically the time and the place. You know what I mean? And I feel like this. As this sounds like such a dick move, but I feel like sometimes, like, techno sets, especially over here, the western side of the world, are like inappropriately played at the wrong time. You know, it's like you've got a techno DJ sandwich between a bunch of house people, and you're playing in the middle of the day. And it's like to have that in a juxtaposition to like a place where everything's open for 3 days. You're on day three, and it's like a derelict building, and there's like pallets everywhere.
Yeah,
and it's like
everyone's been there for 3 days.
Yeah, and there's food being served, and you're just kind of like, this makes fucking sense, and I get it here. Not to say that doesn't exist anywhere else, but I just feel like context in which I experienced it here was definitely like my lens changed a lot when I was over there, for sure. Made me appreciate it a little bit.
Tell us a little bit about that, actually. How did you end up in Germany, and what, and again, how long? Yeah. I know we spoke outside, but how long were you in Germany?
And
was it for music?
It was for music.
Okay, cool,
just was like at a point in time where I was just sort of starting to release music on some labels and felt like it was a good opportunity. I'd visited the summer before and was like, all right, I'm going to come over and make a go of it. And just terms of having some regular bookings and trying to, you know, do that sort of thing. So I was there for like 4 or 5 years, I guess.
Cool, man.
And while I was there, it was like an amazing opportunity. Yeah, I got to hold down a residency with this group of guys called Colfine, who did this night at IPSA, which is no longer there, but was sort of in the CDV area, and met a bunch of guys like Black Loops and Carlo, and like these mutual friends that sort of fostered me to continue on doing what I'm doing now.
Nice. How was that process, you know, obviously leaving Canada and going over there? Was it
I mean, it was like a reality check, I guess, in a lot of ways, because I went over there with some preconceived notions of like, yeah, doing it, gonna go over there, gonna play all the clubs, and everybody's gonna book me. And in reality, it was like, you know,
you still gotta do your hustle.
Well, you gotta work, and it's fucking hard, and obviously that's to be expected. But it was very educational. It was a reality check. I put a lot of things into perspective in terms of like, okay, you know, you're not there yet, and that's fine, and you don't need to be stressed about making your existence about trying to do something, because that's when the thing that I started doing this for becomes void and null, because I love music, and I've always loved it, and it's like once it becomes this sort of soulless pursuit to be validated by society, it's not that, and where's the love? And so I decided, like, all right, I'm going to move back home and get, like, a corporate job. So I did come back home. I missed the mountains. I worked in a corporate setting at a law firm for a few years. And then, you know, COVID happened, and I was kind of like, shit, I want to make music again. So,
cool, man.
Long story way from Germany back to where we are.
That's fucking awesome, man. Yeah. That's all part of the journey, right?
Yeah,
that's
definitely.
That's why we kind of do these shows and a talk. And whoa, we almost lost a camera.
Jesus.
There,
I keep on feeling like somebody's dipping in, and I'm like, nah, it's the fucking land.
It picks up here. Just move that one in a little push there, bud. There's a bit of editing we'll have to do. We're good. So Germany. So again, moving back, came back to Canada. You brought up just then, COVID happened.
Yes.
And you decided, I want to start making music again.
More music, or investing more time into it.
Yeah.
Admit, you know, where I was working, the sector in which I was working closed down, and it sort of just presented an opportunity, which sort of forced me into a hiatus of like spending a year collecting everything that I'd been writing, deciding not to keep on releasing EPs, because I was like, I fucking hate that I'm like trying to create something for this time frame. So I spent that time, wrote an album, and just sort of spent the last year ruminating off of that album. So COVID was a good thing, I think, in the sense that...
It's funny, actually. I think... No, I didn't
in that regard, it's not a good thing for all the lives that are lost and the way that it is. Retract that in regards for me.
And for some point, I think for the art itself, like dance music, electronic music, and I'm sure other musics, all these artists all of a sudden were at home.
Yeah.
And they had more time.
Yeah.
What are you going to do when you got a load of time? Yeah. You're going to create.
Fucking write music.
You're going to create.
Yeah, man.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? In my whatever art you're doing. It's, all of a sudden, a whole load of us had time to create.
And none of us had the time to want to think about what was going on. So it was like a better reason.
Absolutely.
To invest all that energy into being like, not thinking about it.
Yeah, man.
Everything's okay.
Going back to Germany, I know we came back to Canada already, but going back to Germany, do you still go over there? Do you still got your, you know, obviously you got your friends?
I still have contacts over there. My friends at the Kofin guys, they took a 2-year hiatus, and they've just recently started throwing shows again.
Oh, nice.
At Prince Charles, because the place I had mentioned had previously sort of burnt down, so they just started up this summer. I think they just did Hidden Spheres and Black Loops and Carlos at Prince Charles last week. I'm going back there.
Nice. I was gonna say, any plans to go back?
I'm going back to do like a bit of a mini Euro tour at the end of September. So September 23rd I'm in London, and then I go over to Leeds on the 24th.
Cool.
And I'll be staying in Germany for basically a month, so
awesome,
seeing those guys and doing a show with them. That's loose right now, but hopefully on the 1st or the 2nd of October there.
That's
so
awesome.
Yeah.
And actually, you brought up the UK while you were over in Germany, did you go over to the UK play a bit?
Yeah.
Because it's so close.
Yeah, definitely. Right? I mean, honestly, like, as we spoke previously about just the influences of Prodigy and Underworld, and just, like, I have a very fond love for the UK in general. So, I've been there a few times. I've gone to Scotland once to play there, and then I played in London twice while I was over
Scotland,
there.
Scotland? Mate, back in the day, Scotland quite embraced the rave scene, like
sub club and all that.
Street rave. Yeah. And some of those, they're still like active.
Yeah,
they're trying to do stuff again. Yeah. I think. But
I think honestly, it's fucking dope over there. I think a lot of the younger Scottish labels that are coming out right now, there's a. I can't remember a name. There's this Scottish producer.
I know exactly.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
I'll hold up. Because I should give her a good show. Man, I can't pronounce her name, but maybe...
I'm terrible at names, too. Give it to Brad. We on a couple of the shows, I'm like... Well,
is this who you're thinking of?
Haile Selassie.
Yeah, honestly, her shit is super next level, man. Like, it's...
Well, let's talk about next level.
Yeah.
Because
let's talk about
let's
next level.
Do it, baby.
Let's fucking do it. Because I'm gonna be honest. Yeah. Your fucking set blew me away, mate.
Oh,
yeah.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah. Thank you.
It was wicked.
And again, you must be stoked to have been Boiler Room, bro.
Yeah. It's honestly like a life. A musical life, long aspiration.
No doubt, man.
To have that. I mean, I remember when it first started, my good buddy Nathan Johnson, who's a Vancouver, Victoria person, his brother Matthew Johnson and him are Midnight Operator. I remember like when they first started and seeing the inception of Boiler Room back then, and from that point being like, okay, this is a marker and something that sort of a lot of people spend their careers trying to work up to have that opportunity to be able to do it. So I'm like greatly honored, and I mean, it's something that I've wanted for a long time.
Man,
and
that sound system too.
Oh my!
It was.
I mean, it was subby at first, but they dialed it in at some point where I was like, okay.
Yeah. There we go. I put my earplugs in. I can fit it more in my chest.
Dude. Honestly, the layout of that stage in comparison to years past, they've done a really, really good job. You know, not that it was bad or anything before. It just felt a lot more open and free and organized, and just
we saw the PK rep just driving around in his truck.
Actually, I'm not sure.
They're doing a good job, man.
I think he's a company that
franchises to him.
Yes. It's something entertainment. He had the PK logo, and then he had
another brand.
What was it called? Anyway,
they've changed a lot of people's minds over here, specifically the PK sound system.
Yeah, it's
Canadian brand.
I think it's Canadian. Don't quote me on it, but I think it's based here on the West Coast. But I mean, forever it was always Function One systems.
Function Ones
everywhere, and everybody would be like, "Fuck this PK sim." And like here, this festival, these guys really embraced having them do all the sound. I'll tell you what, it's fucking
it sounds
great.
Good, man. I've got to admit, like, we
they do a bang up job.
Night.
Like,
it's some pretty amazing sound out there.
Definitely
got going on.
I mean, the stage build this year as well.
Oh yeah, man.
Big ups to Bass Coast, honestly.
Yeah,
like,
they've done a good show, man. We're hoping to actually get Andrea on and have a chat with her.
Yeah,
definitely.
And Liz, just to talk, like,
just
a little
salt
bit.
Of the earth people to be facilitating such a special event for this side of the country.
Oh, and look what they built. Look what they've built over the years.
And I mean, look what they've done with how they built it. They've reinvested into the infrastructure. They're constantly bringing it back better.
Absolutely.
And it helps the city of, you know, Merritt. Like, it's thumbs up across
the
board.
It's a win-win situation, isn't it? It's a win-win situation.
Yeah, man. For sure. And I mean, honestly, it's super lacking. And I mean, as EDM festivals get bigger in the States and all that sort of shit, it gets sort of blown out. This sort of stuff is like really, you know, really specifically curated festivals that cater to
all
not
kinds.
Just a bunch of to all kinds, you know, and
music,
not it's
definitely
rare.
Got the eclectic feel to it is amazing.
Definitely.
I love that.
It's a labor of love by all people involved, and I feel like it's really reflective in the vibes here.
And I think you can just feel it by also the energy and the love of the people
that
are here.
Yeah. Like for me, this is like home base. My favorite sets, the most successful sets I've ever had have been here, and it's like I don't know. It's for a reason, for sure. I mean,
it's awesome, man.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Stoked that these guys do this. We're super lucky, because without it, there wouldn't be a lot going on in the West Coast that would compare to this.
Oh,
you know? Like,
well, no.
You know, no offense, Sean Balan stuff is great, but I just think that this is...
It's more catered to EDM, dubstep.
Yeah, I think it's just grown out of its bridges, in the sense that it's like it's been around for so fucking long, and it's just so its own thing in that way. I mean, it will always be the thing, the shining beacon that people think of when they think of Western Canada and summer music festivals,
absolutely.
You know?
Actually, Shambhala, while we're on the show and we're talking about Shambhala, give us a
shout out,
because next year we'd love to come and do the podcast at Shambhala.
Yeah, and big shouts. This year I couldn't play because it's just couldn't make it with scheduling, but I'm coming next year and it's going to be fucking glorious. So
perfect.
Hit me up.
Yeah, man, you'll be there.
Yeah, man.
You'll be there.
And actually, while we're talking about that, what do you have planned for the next, you know, the future coming up? You've got projects going on?
I've got a couple. I mean, just of yesterday, this latest record that I put out on my buddy Carlos's label, the Rainforest EP, just sold out in Subwax in Barcelona.
Oh, beautiful.
We got probably about 4 or 5 records coming out. I got a record coming out on Ten Snakes label, True Romantics.
Really?
And then another project coming out on Cats and Dogs sub-label, Steps, which is coming out in the next month, and then
cool, man.
Another
you're a busy
one.
Fucking boy, Jesse.
Yeah,
doing,
honestly,
bro?
I've just been spending the last few months of my life just like super trying to create and hustle and like do this music thing because I fucking love it and I got the time to do it.
That's so cool.
Life
man.
Is yeah. short, so yeah,
absolutely.
You know,
no, I totally agree, yeah. mate. Like,
I need to take some of that advice on, man, and get back in the studio. Like,
I tell you what, man, I it sounds good in theory, but it's fucking.
It's hard work, man.
But not only that, I also have so much procrastination. I mean, I make it sound like I'm just fucking in the studio.
I'm there all day long, man. I wake up at 7 in the morning.
My mail list is a bunch of angry, you know, label heads being like, where the fuck are the pre-masters? And I'm like, I'm sorry, dude.
It's coming, man.
They're coming, bro.
It's, trust me.
It's like when I'm on my computer.
You're going to love it. I tell you, man.
You're going to love it when I love it.
I told you. Earlier, you was like a salesman when you was trying to give us a drink. Yeah. You want this drink, right, man?
Bro, I got it in my blood.
I was gonna say when I'm like trying to produce a track, right? I'm like, there's my kick, man. I've been listening to the kick for like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Get my phone out. I'll go on YouTube, right? And like something will pop up on you for you.
Yeah.
Oh man, a guy sat. I don't know, like Mr. Beast comes up, and I watch his video. I'm like, why am I watching this? I've just gone from that to doing music, right? And I'm like watching Mr. Beast. I don't know, hold his eyes open for fucking 24 hours.
You're like, but you know what? I do the same. I'll do the same thing. Like, yeah. I will open up Ableton, and then I'll be like, oh man, it'd be really cool if I had like a sample of a saxophone or a nice disco drum break or something. Yeah. And then I'll open up YouTube, or I'll get lost in iTunes or some shit for like hours, and then I'll be like, all right. Well, that's it. Like,
yeah,
I won't
done,
do anything.
Like, yeah.
You know, like,
so when people go, how long do you spend on a kick? 3 hours? Well, 20 minutes, actually. But like 2.5 hours on fucking YouTube.
I mean, it depends how many times I swap it out, you know? Just sounds good at the beginning, and then you get through the midway point, and you're like, fuck, this kick has no balls. It's just... The kick is never good enough. The hats are never crispy enough. Nothing is ever balanced enough, I feel. For myself, personally.
Yeah, I feel the same.
How about this one? So... procrastinating aside, if you had to produce a track, and this is a great question you had with Joel, how long could you, if you sat there, procrastinating's done, okay, I'm here, I got all the shit in front of me that I need, I got all my plugins, hardware, whatever I'm gonna do, how long can you produce a track in? How long does it take you to pretty much come up with your idea and sit there and go, okay, I'm ready for this to be mastered?
I'd say it's super circumstantial.
Yeah.
Because I would say it's really dependent on so many factors. It's like, it's dependent on, like, I mean, the vibe that you're in at that moment, like how quickly you come across things, like your comfort level with like giving in to your initial ideas, you know? So I feel like some of the best things that I've done, I've made in like maybe 45 minutes or an hour in terms of just like
the base of it,
like the arrangement of it where I've jammed it and everything else, the like work of mixing is done afterwards. But I mean, there's been also certain things that have taken me like months to complete, or things that I've just completely abandoned. So I would say that it's like, it's super dependent, you know? I would say the moments when it's fucking fire, like I just released also a record on Sloth Boogie with my buddy Max, who's actually one of the curators of this festival, Max Lewis.
I was speaking to Max recently just about before you.
Yeah, he has one of the like the best studios in Vancouver. He's like invested thousands of dollars
it's all good, man, because I want to hear that sort of stuff. But I messaged him and he said, yeah, I'm super busy, but I want to have a chat. I'd love to get him on because, like you say, he's got that investment in a studio like that is a cool topic to talk about.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, I mean, and honestly, like, Max is a gearhead. Like, and if anything, I'll tell you, us working together making music has totally changed my sort of, like, I want to say snobby perception of gearheads, but I was just like, I don't need it. I don't like it. I don't see the point of having all this. I thought it was sort of like a dick measuring contest, and to actually work with somebody who is so dedicated to collecting and like to actually be like, okay, sequencing on this is way different and way better. And I fully get it now. But I'm still poor. So shout outs if anybody wants to Venmo me for some hardware.
Or donate.
Whatever, man. That's the magic.
Why don't you just help us all out?
There must be grants for us, surely.
There's a few that are coming. I mean, I gotta get on that shit.
Don't tell
anyone. Any grants for lonely stoners? Just looking for a couple of synthesizers?
Right. Which ones do you want? $10,000.
Yeah, you know.
All of them. Whatever you got, man.
I want a profit.
Well, man. Jesse.
Awesome. Dude, Jesse, thanks so much for coming on the show, bro.
Absolute
it's been
pleasure.
A great chat, mate.
100%.
So nice to meet you, mate.
Yeah, 100%. Love to meet you guys as well. Thanks
I hope
for
we catch up again soon.
Dude, 100%.
Again,
your
set rocked, man. I'm so glad I got to catch some of it. I didn't get the whole bit, but
I got
I got to see.
You got the good parts, so that's fucking good enough.
I got some shots and videos as well, actually. So we'll
send them my way. Connect with me for sure.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely. And maybe, you know, in the future, if you ever around in Vancouver and you want to come back for another chat and talk about new stuff, we'll get you back in the studio.
Yeah.
We'll do
come back
catch
to
up.
Studio.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, boys. Thank you. Fuck
Jesse,
yes.
Take care, bro.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, easy. Guys. It's time for me to go eat a bunch of Japanese food and get super drunk.
I'm going to my sushi show.
How's that? Japanese.
Oh, man.
I was like, what am I going to wear tonight? I was like, oh, I've got my little shirt.